Good morning, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to episode 33 of the Open Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massively open Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Today we're going to revisit a topic that we covered, you know, almost a year ago, because the momentum for this concept of DevOps and its sibling NoOps has been growing very, very quickly. And to do that, we brought back sort of veteran of the show, Nick Weaver. Nick, welcome back, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
We also decided to bring back veteran of the show, Aaron Delp. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
I know. I almost feel like a guest at this point.
You've been busy, man. So good to have you back. Good to have everybody back. It's been an interesting couple of weeks. Aaron, you were over in London for Cisco Live. Nick and I went off to the West Coast last week and did VMware Partner Exchange, and then we did the Cloud Connect conference out in Santa Clara. So we ought to start there. Any initial impressions from the three shows, or kind of from what you saw on Twitter, kind of comparison of the three shows?
Yeah, so this is Aaron. I'll kick it off first. So Cisco Live over in London was a very interesting show from the standpoint of management and orchestration, because that's kind of what I'm heading up these days. Everything's still kind of fuzzy, kind of cloudy, and it's developing very quickly. But the management orchestration, in my opinion, you know, still has a good bit of work to do.
Yeah. So you were dealing with stuff that was sort of like Cisco Intelligent Automation, BMC, CA, some of the sort of VMware vCloud Director. Are you hearing anything new in that space? Is it still people just trying to, you know, change their organization to be able to use the tools, or anything sort of moved the needle in the last couple of months or quarters?
Yeah, probably the biggest thing is actually going from that proof of concept into I wouldn't say full-blown production at this point, but it's definitely more of like that alpha-beta phase. We're definitely seeing a lot of that. It's almost like, I feel like it's almost like VDI like 2 years ago, right? Where you spent like 2 years in the industry, this is the year of VDI, and everyone drew it out on whiteboards, but no one actually did anything. And then you went to, okay, yeah, some people are actually doing proof of concepts this year. And then there was a big year of proof of concepts, and then there was another big year of like alphas and betas, right? And then, you know, I think everyone, you and I actually talked about this the other day. Everyone's kind of figuring out VDI, you know, this may or may not be the year of VDI again, but at the same time, everyone's kind of realizing, well, you know what? It may not be, and it may not ever be, right? And that was definitely what the interesting vibe of the conference overall.
Okay. So, Nick, before we get your feedback on the West Coast conferences, congratulations. vSphere Land Top 25 blog. Congratulations, dude.
Yeah, thanks, absolutely.
I wasn't sure how I was going to rate, considering I don't put anywhere near as much content out as, you know, some of the big guys like Duncan. And I was pleasantly surprised with some of the guys that are really doing probably some of the newest, most effort, like Andre's VDI blog, since you guys are bringing up the VDI topic, and William Lamb. Those two guys have just been putting out just a massive amount of content this last year, and I was really happy to see them both coming up where they deserve.
Yeah, I think those guys did well. I think you definitely got voted up for quality over quantity, which is cool. Seems like a lot of guys doing stuff around like Power CLI, PowerShell, a lot of scripting stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If you think about the scripting stuff, I mean, the reason they get so many votes is because, I mean, that's really kind of putting real results to a user. If you're an admin looking to control a vSphere environment or VMware environment, try to get your job done in a more efficient way, you know, Alan's blog, Luke's blog, William's blog, all these different guys, they really put out content that actually makes your job easier. So, I mean, that's definitely why they're at the top of the list and they get as many votes as they do. It's interesting from an ops perspective. I know some of the things we'll talk about today are probably going to be about ops, but from an ops perspective, a lot of these scripting languages is kind of the first start for an admin to really start getting into automation.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about our West Coast trip. So Nick and I sort of tag teamed both Partner Exchange and Cloud Connect, and man, I don't, you know, I'd be interested in your feedback. They felt like really, really different shows. You know, I would think that Partner Exchange probably felt a lot like Cisco Live. It was, you know, stuff that is gotten to be fairly mainstream, a lot of virtualization stuff, you know, a few new things talked about, some new things around automation. And then you went out to Cloud Connect and it was, you know, people living on the bleeding edge. It was, you know, guys doing stuff at really big scale. A lot of, well, you got into it, but we'll get into it. I mean, what was your take up between the comp, you know, kind of comparing and contrasting those two shows?
You know, I think it's really interesting, and you phrased it well on the differences. But what shocks me is I remember doing virtualization at a ground level as a customer back when you brought up that word and your CIO and your CEO looked at you like you were crazy, right? And you had to have, like, PowerPoint presentations, and you had to present on why virtualization was a good idea because it was so new and kind of hard to grasp. And now if you go to, like, VMware's Partner Exchange, you're walking around, nobody's questioning virtualization anymore. It's really become so mainstream, and I don't want to use the word legacy, but really if you compare it against Cloud Connect and when we showed up there, I mean, some of the things they're talking about are things that no one's adopted yet correctly or doesn't even have a good understanding of. It's really – I really kind of think that you can really see the juxtapose of the older style virtualization being mainstreamed, and then with like shows like Cloud Connect, kind of that next evolution of where things may or may not be going. And I thought Partner Exchange was quiet in a lot of ways, but at the same time – it was so stable. It'd be like going to an Oracle event or a Microsoft event or some event where you have a really strong core of people who are already in this business, have been in it for years, and know what they want and what they're working on. And, you know, a lot of the focus there was mainly around the partners and enabling them to reach out further to the customers. I think Cloud Connect was fascinating mainly because, like you said, it was the hyperscale stuff, the guys like Netflix and some of the really cool, powerful new stuff coming out of Instratus and Rightscale. It was much more about the theory and the economics and the implementation in the next 5 to 10 years with cloud and less about, you know, what are we going to do with what we have in our data center right now. I think that was the real big difference.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the couple of takeaways I had was there was one thread that went on a couple of different ways, and it was this idea that, you know, for a long time people, the last couple of years, people have talked about, you know, evolve your IT, evolve your data center to private cloud, or they're talking about hybrid cloud. And it was Cloud Connect was sort of the first time you heard some people distinctly say, and whether it was like James Staton from Forrester or Randy Bias or some others who sort of said, look, I don't think that model's going to work. I think what you literally have to do is sort of fence off your old IT, and I don't want to, you know, certain necessarily call it old IT, but sort of fence off your traditional IT, your legacy IT, the stuff you've been virtualizing, and almost create a separate environment for the new types of applications. So it's not going to be about, you know, virtualizing Exchange. It's going to be about building mobile applications. It's going to be about building, you know, short-term versus longer-term applications. And it was the first time you heard some sort of prominent people kind of just finally put a line in the sand and say, guys, I don't know that this is an evolution. This really almost is sort of a cut and run for the new scale of stuff, whether it's the stuff that's tied to DevOps or it's sort of mobile computing or it's whatever. Did you feel that sense at all as well, that was there was sort of a distinct people trying to cut and move forward with certain things?
Yeah, you know, I did. And what was really interesting and what caught me is because, like I said, I came from being a customer, and then I came over to EMC, and I worked very heavily with the VMware areas. And so for me, Cloud Connect was kind of a like stepping into cold water. I was like, whoa, these guys have a very different opinion of things, right or wrong, and but it's evolving, right? It's very new and fresh, and it really kind of opened my eyes to kind of a different perspective. And I agree with you completely. And I think it's kind of like, if I were to describe it, it's like they're less concerned about existing stuff in the data center, existing methods, existing operations. They're more thinking about the end goal and finish line, right? And for them, the finish line is not about how you do it as much as what you get out of it. And that's what I really caught, was they were talking about the services themselves. You know, I want to be able to dynamically, like Netflix is a great example, I want to be able to dynamically have people all around the world watching videos and be able to scale at that on demand. And it was about the service, right? There was a whole focus. Even like the NoOps stuff that we'll probably talk about a bit, but was mentioned in some of the conversations, the goal was to just enable the service and scale the service and offer, like you said, mobile, direct services, and not try to like take your Exchange or take your SharePoint or take your kind of legacy style apps and turn them into something they weren't designed to be, but maybe start from scratch, greenfield, fresh new ideas, fresh new approaches. And I think the really coolest part about it was when we got to some of the economic discussions and the cycle discussions about, you know, how do these larger organizations, how does a Citibank or a JPMorgan Chase or a GE, or how do these large organizations make that change? and kind of take on that greenfield startup kind of stuff without having to the legacy hold them down? That's a great question. I don't have an answer to it, but it was the first time I've really kind of absorbed that question and thought about it.
Yeah.
And let me jump in and say this, too. The kind of light bulb moment I had actually was Randy Bias's blog this week when he kind of – him and Beaker went back and forth for a little while over the initial OpenCloud announcement and then reactions, and then there were some kind of corrections from Randy. And what I really liked about it, and actually it's combining that along with a statement actually, Brian, you made on Twitter of the whole idea of the older stuff, if you will, the enterprise stuff, and how do you not evolve into something new? But I think you made the comment, it's almost like you starve it, right? And the analogy I use is it's another clean sheet of paper. This clean sheet of paper happens every, you know, 10 to 15 years. Is, you know, think about it this way, mainframes, right? Or mainframes, or IBM AS400s, which I actually dealt with a lot way back when. And you didn't migrate from a mainframe environment or an AS400 environment into client server.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then,
yep.
And so it was this whole, you started over with that clean sheet of paper. And so are we at another clean sheet of paper is, well, probably a good question.
And what's fascinating about that too is it's not just like sometimes people like look at technology for technology's sake, right? So let's do this because it's the cool new thing and everybody else is doing it. But I thought it was really fascinating when they were talking about it that the new thing is going to be the new competitive model, which is going to give people it's going to give companies and organizations advantages in the marketplace, right? So the reason people left the mainframe days was because they couldn't come out with products fast enough, or they couldn't distribute them geographically fast enough, right? I mean, they had to move to the client server world to support the workloads and support the new call centers across the world and all these different things. And so people left mainframes because they had to compete, right? And so I think the cloud is going to be the same way. It's going to be an issue where, you know, startups are going to take market share. Companies are going to have to try to figure out a way to adapt. And I think that's why Simon Wardley really gave great examples of that and kind of the cycle of an evolution of change.
Yeah, and let me add another one too. Another major reason I saw it, because actually, so right out of college, I did IBM Global Services. IBM Global Services, I was working on the Kodak account. At the time, everything was mainframe and AS400 batch jobs, and we were actually in the process of doing that whole client server, rewriting the entire billing app and all of this stuff over again. And so I got to sit in a lot of those transitional kind of clean sheet of paper meetings, right? And another major reason for a lot of that was simply economics. The maintenance and keeping skills up to date and keeping code up to date and simply progressing forward in that mainframe or AS400 environment was simply way too expensive. And it'll be interesting to see as we're starting to see this economic model start to come out of is AWS, for instance, cheaper than straight up, you know, operating something in your data center. We're starting to see some of those economics and financial comparisons come to be, and all depending on where those studies show, you could very easily have that as a transition or a tipping point as well going forward.
Well, I think we're going to see a couple things. So Randy's. You brought up Randy Bias's sort of stuff that the cloud scaling guys mentioned, and Randy brought us. You know, I think two things kind of got confused there. He used the word open a lot, and open was kind of the word of the week last week or two weeks ago. Cloud, it was sort of like open washing, and I joked around in the intro that we're the open cloud cast, and just. But you know, I think Randy used that for a reason. Maybe not what he wanted to, but I think more importantly, the thing he was trying to sort of point out, and I'll use an analogy that'll be relevant to you, Aaron. It would sort of be like saying, yeah, I'd like to lose 10, 12 pounds or whatever, and I could do that by, you know, eating a few more vegetables and, you know, getting out and running a few more times. Or you could do what you and a bunch of folks are sort of doing, which is like, we're doing P90X and we're doing Shakeology, and we're sort of cutting and doing something fairly radical because A, there's a little bit of a community that can help me do it, but B, like, I need something really different to change things, right? Like your status in life, your age in life, to what you do, like you need something different. And I think what we're going to see, and I don't know that Randy totally has his arms wrapped around this yet or that anybody does, but I think we're going to see more and more people say, like, my conversation as a technologist won't be with the CIO anymore because that guy will be responsible for maintaining the existing stuff, the stuff that does transaction processing or does HR, I'm going to go have that conversation with the guy who runs the line of business, who runs sales or who runs marketing or who runs something that will change the business, not reduce cost or, you know, roll out an application faster. It'll be the guy who wants to change the business. And I think that's, I think we'll start seeing that a little bit this year and into the next year or so. That's what this new trend is going to be about. It's going to be about, you know, using Netflix as an example, not of how to, you know, serve out videos, but how to like radically change your business as a technology or using technology to change that. So,
you know, it's really funny with the open stuff because, you know, being a VMware guy, there was a bit of, you know, poison in the messaging around VMware in not being closed in some areas. And I think, you know, VMware themselves, I'm going to bring this up, but I think VMware's example with Cloud Foundry is just a great shining example of changing the marketplace. And I still think there's a balance between, you know, openness and open sourcing enables development for everybody, right? Everybody wins. We can all look at the code. We can all change our own code. We can all develop. It's quicker to standards. But at the same time, there's the issue where all this legacy stuff and this newer virtualization infrastructure as a service stuff, you know, VMware's kicked butt as far as stability and products. And so I thought it was really interesting kind of that you got some guys yelling open for good reasons, right? Saying, hey, we should be open and sharing because we should be developing standards and try pushing this new message and this new technology forward so that everybody benefits, right? And then there was that kind of flip side with the open washing where like, hey, we're open because we're not that guy. Right, with a big arrow pointing over at VMware, saying, right. "Look, they're evil." Right, and that I had issue with that because in my mind, you can say you're not somebody else, but then show what you are. You know, yep. Show something cool, show something you can do that's differentiating or powerful. Right, so that's the only issue I had with the open washing was like there was the difference between let's be open because let's do something awesome together, and let's be open because you know we're not somebody else, and you should buy us instead.
Yep. Yep. So let's get back to the DevOps stuff. So that was a good recap. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see the typical sort of bifurcation. You know, folks that do legacy stuff, folks that are kind of doing like Aaron said or Nick said, it's sort of the mainstream. It feels comfortable stuff, and then we'll always have the bleeding edge guys. So Nick, you've been spending a lot of time kind of exploring this DevOps space more than we did, say, a year ago when we were talking about people. And you've been playing with a lot of tools. You've been playing with a lot of different systems, Chef, Puppet, Open vSwitch, you know, a bunch of things. Like, what are you seeing, you know, what are you seeing out there as sort of like the best of breed tools? What's kind of evolved over the last year or so? You know, kind of where's this DevOps movement going in terms of the best tools, in terms of the best kind of best practices and so forth?
Well, I don't know if I can go into a best practice discussion yet, being that I don't quite do the customer end of post stuff like I used to. But I can say this. I think it's fascinating if you look at the Chef and Puppet models and the openness of those models. I think it's fascinating that a lot of these things are developing with the idea of bridging the gap around operations. So, you know, the whole DevOps mix is that you bridge the gap between development and operations, and you enable developers to do cool things and speed up the operations guys. And then the whole NoOps idiom is like the idea that you don't need operations, right? Developers can directly drive their releases and their configuration management. And I think we've still got a lot of development to go and a lot of hooking of different areas together in layers. But if you look at some of these companies like Puppet and Chef, of course, and then like some of the scaling guys and management guys like in Stratus, and right scale. I think it's fascinating how you're going to start seeing, because of the openness, the interconnectivity between them. So like, you know, in Stratus announced some stuff around being able to manage Puppet manifests and Chef recipes. And I know some other guys made some other announcements around there. But I think the most interesting part is if things are open enough, right, and if AWS is kind of the end model for that marketplace right now, I think what's going to be fascinating is not going to be the individual products, but then more how the customers and or vendors and or PS orgs out there that help people deploy this utilize those tool sets as a chain. I think it's going to be more of a fascinating thing, right? So I want to build this cloud service, and I go out there and look at the menu of options out there, and I pick this guy because they're great at building images, and I pick this guy because, you know, like Puppet Labs, because they're incredible about configuration management. And they've got like proxy based stuff, so they can deploy switches and other things too. And I go pick this guy because they've got an incredible OpenFlow, you know, controller for my network that I want to use for scale out. And each one of those guys has best practices and standards for connecting to the other guy right off the bat because of the openness, how easy it is to integrate with each other. And it's interesting because instead of buying these monolithic, big, huge suites like you would get with like Tivoli or maybe some other ones. Instead, you go out there and you kind of menu shop and interconnect things that are meant to work with each other. And in all of them have open source. You can see the code and make modifications yourself or put in requests, pull requests or stuff like that. That's what I find fascinating. And I think, you know, I had a conversation with a couple guys about NoOps, and I'm still not – I think the NoOps end of it is still going to be a very niche thing for specific people. I think the DevOps piece where you still got an operations department, you're still interconnected there is important. But, you know, I'll come out and say it. I think operations in itself in the new cloud model has a very, 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 very limited role. I really do. And I think it's only at massive scale. Maybe you even still need some of those guys. Because some of the things we were talking about at Cloud Connect around you know, services that intelligently scale and are based on the actual service themselves, not, hey, this is a VM or, hey, this is a network. It's about, no, hey, this is the application service that the user needs, right? Here's the library service, the catalog service. Here's the identity service. The fact that things are going to be built around scaling to that makes the operating system and even the virtual machine so much less important. In turn, it also makes operations less important. And that's coming from an operations guy like myself.
So that brings up sort of an interesting thing. I know you and I had some different discussions with guys like Dave McCrory and some folks that were running, you know, various platforms as service platforms. And
yep.
you know, if you really dive under the covers on that, those platforms today don't necessarily use virtual machines. I mean, they're not dependent. You know, like Cloud Foundry is not dependent on vSphere, for example, right? I mean, it could run on
right.
top of it as a, like. You know, for the little bit that you understand about that space, like what does that mean, right? So we've got a whole class of people that know how to run sort of a VM based infrastructure, right? You know, I want to roll out stuff. What is that? You know, contrast that with somebody say trying to run a Cloud Foundry environment or deploying. Like, how does that sort of scaling happen? You know, what's different? What's the same?
Well, you know, if you were to ask me 2 years ago, what of all the pieces of cloud, which is going to be the most in demand, I would have said infrastructure as a service, no doubt. If you were to ask me today that same question, I'd actually say platform as a service. I'm a big, big fan of PaaS right now. And the reason being is that you just said it. If you do it right, it's not dependent on a specific virtualization technology. Because ultimately, if you look at Cloud Foundry's model, the DEA stuff is just a container, right? I can run my app in one those containers, I can run another one of those containers. It doesn't matter where it's at. And that container could be a VM. It could be physical hardware. It could be something out of another public cloud. It could be anything you want. And if you look at some of the examples of people out there like HP and others that are taking this and actually spinning it up and running it, you have no idea what they're actually running that on, right? And to be honest, it doesn't really matter. All it matters is can this accept my application and does it have the right uptime and can I bind things to the correct database? And I think it's the fascinating thing is you're still having a container-based model, right? We're still talking about things that exist inside of one object structure, and you still got to move them to another one in downtime or make sure you got enough containers that do certain things. But all these, and I hate to use the word legacy around this stuff because, like I said, 4 or 5 years ago, this stuff was brand new. But all these things that we got used to, the virtual machine container model, you know, networking being connected to virtual machine layers and IOPS at a virtual machine layer and all these things we work so hard at the hypervisor layer, all of a sudden something like PaaS just kind of throws that all out the window. I mean, if I can launch my Ruby app or my Scala app or my Node.js app across thousands of nodes in a PaaS and distribute that across, you know, different data centers, do I really care if that's in a virtual machine? Do I care if that virtual machine runs a specific version? Do I care if that virtual machine has a specific IOPS level? Does it really matter? And it doesn't. It's interesting. And now, granted, that's for an app that can consume it, right? I can't launch my Exchange in a PaaS. But if I was developing a brand new mail application as a company, you know, something greenfield, and I was writing it in Ruby or I was writing it in .NET or something that I could use a PaaS for, it's a much, much better architecture model for scale.
So Nick, two things I kind of want to throw at you and get your opinion on. So I completely agree, and I almost see that Brian and I, this has almost become the VDI bashing, you know, podcast, but VDI is almost a prime example of that infrastructure as a service versus platform as a service in a way, because serving out virtual desktops versus just serving out applications that can get to the data. And quite frankly, you know, probably the iPad gets credit for changing that market or that mindset, because before the iPad came along, no one really was super interested in getting these applications on all these other devices. But as soon as it was like opening Pandora's box. It was like, oh, wow, I can access this app on this, and I could do this, and I could do that. And, you know, everything just kind of spiraled out of control. And now it's like, well, I don't really want a VDI client on my iPad. I want all of these different applications on my iPad.
Right.
Well, and go ahead.
It's weird, right? So, and like I said, I'm like this guy that like stepped into the strange, weird world where everything that I've been working with, you just see it differently. And I don't think virtualization, I don't think hypervisors, and I don't think even VDI are invalidated. I just think we're seeing a delineation. We're seeing a fine line between, like you said, the iPad device being used correctly and the legacy stuff being used powerfully, right? So if I'm a company, let's say I'm like a hospital, right? And I've got a set of applications I developed over 10 years that were on a specific desktop, and I spent millions developing these. Well, I'm not going to blow another millions overnight to make them work on the iPad. So VDI may be a great solution for me to move to better scale things for myself, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 years out. But if I'm going to stay competitive with my other hospitals in the area or even globally, then I'm definitely going to start putting some research money into or looking at companies that may offer iPad-based apps that may replace my legacy applications eventually. The real cool thing, like you said, is, I mean, these new technologies, these new devices, cloud itself means you don't need a Windows desktop. Period. You just need the application. I just need the service. I don't need – and it's not like the web world, right, where I still needed a browser. I don't need that. All I need is the ability to have some kind of API or interface that goes to some kind of cool UX experience that somebody can understand intuitively on a device that's easy to carry around and has a decent battery life. That's it.
Yep.
I get the same
and
level of
and I think that was the key transition in the mindset of the industry of it went from, hey, this legacy app, that's okay. And then, oh, no, wait, I can get to it in a browser. Yeah, that's okay. Now all of a sudden it's like, wait a second. And, you know, maybe because Apple slightly crippled the browser with, you know, some of the support things they do. But no matter what, it became, well, you know, this application and API-based kind of mindset set in at that point.
Yeah, and there's stuff like HTML5 too. I've got a side project that I've been working on in HTML5, and having done deep dives into it, I mean, there's a lot of limitations. I'm not going to say it's perfect, and there aren't things I don't like about it. But I mean, you can do some incredibly powerful stuff on the iPhone or the iPad without having to go in and write Objective-C and dive into the UI elements inside of, you know, Apple's frameworks or cross, and then stuff that works cross Android, cross Windows Phone, cross Mac. It's interesting that, that in essence, people just want to be able to get access to information, change information as quickly and as fast as possible. So a good example is stuff like Instagram, right? So I 6 months, a year ago, I wouldn't even touch that app. I'm like, oh no, another picture app on the phone, whatever, that's not cool. And then, you know, I've got a camera phone on my phone, wanted the picture app. And then I started playing with it one day, I don't know why, and I was like, man, this thing takes really darn good photos with nice filters that kind of deliver the message I want to from my picture, right? I'm taking a picture of my daughter dancing in front of a park, and I use Instagram and hit a filter, it impresses you. Now, in reality, that little filter is just a set of little algorithm and math that just lives inside a tiny little phone and probably 6-8K of memory, right? It's not that much. And you go back 5 or 10 years, and you got to go get some Photoshop install that's 500 megs, and you got to have a powerful enough workstation to run it on. I mean, there's a big difference between what we can get now on these tiny little phones and what we can use and how quickly we can do things versus back when, you know, I was in college, and it was very expensive, difficult to get, and heavy. It's just interesting how easily the mobile interface and how easily the scale-out stuff and API landscape has made things for us.
Well, I think it brings up, so it sort of ties back to the economics that got talked about. So think about, you just kind of wrap your head around these economics, because some of the stuff that Nick talks about sometimes, if you're not a developer, will sort of, you know, make your head explode. So, you know, think about this. So if you're a startup business, you're a small business, and you're doing nothing but a bunch of 20-year-old folks that are trying to go after something. Like, for example, you're the guys that are doing Box.net, right? This whole idea of like make enterprise applications simpler, right? Their whole mindset is, don't think about these big, massive applications. Think about them as like simple to use, something you'd want to use every day, so on and so forth. So you're going to have a whole set of workers that are going to come into the workforce that are going to be less expensive, want to do things different ways. And if you don't have a sort of an IT strategy that says, hey, how can I enable them to be productive, i.e. Right. using mobile devices, wanting to use stuff that is way more consumer-oriented than anything else, all of a sudden it becomes fairly easy to go, oh, okay, I can see where as an organization, a big business or a little business, where you say, like, I better figure that out. And if it means, like, I got to do development around apps that are great on a mobile device, whether it means I've got to start developing a strategy to use APIs because now I can start, doing things from multiple things. It's a whole different mindset than if you think about, like, well, I've got to extend the life of this SAP application. I've got to extend the life of this legacy Microsoft application. And you really start getting into this, people could at scale build a small business that scales to meet compete against my big business or is global against my big business, right. and the apps might actually be the thing that drive that, right? And it has nothing to do with virtualization, or has nothing to do with, it's about making the apps that are simple and easy to use and available on a mobile device and that sort of stuff.
And Nick, let me throw another one at you too.
Okay.
So this is kind of ties in what Brian just said and also something we were talking about earlier. How much, so when you talk about PaaS, right, and you're saying you really have no concept of the underlying infrastructure, or at least you shouldn't, right? But one of the big issues right now is, okay, what's one of the largest frameworks out there? Well, it's the .NET framework. And Azure and Microsoft released kind of their first attempt at the Azure platform, if you will, and everyone was kind of joking at, well, holy crap, look at all the underlying infrastructure you need. And it really felt like it was a legacy environment and a legacy licensing model trying desperately to evolve and update themselves and also protect a revenue stream at the same time. And how do you feel about that too?
So, I was a customer in a shop that was heavy, heavy, heavy .NET, and I was in the architecture council, and so we had Azure pitches where they came in and said, you're spending all this money on .NET, and you're spending all this money on .NET consulting. We had very, 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 very smart, very good, great consulting companies that worked with us, and you should take a look at Azure. And Azure, when it came out, was basically like an SMB model. I mean, the feature parity was terrible. I mean, it did some really cool things in a very limited way. And then I always talk about Azure as being, it looked like they started from the bottom and worked their way up rather than coming out with some big, huge, massive scale stuff and then kind of working their way down to SMB. I think the Cloud Foundry .NET stuff that came out, as limited as it is, if you're a real pure .NET guy and you dive through it, you'll know what I mean. I think because it's IIS containers and only certain things you can do. Well, not certain things. There's certain things you can't do. But I think those models are kind of a shock, right, to the Azure platform. Because if I can launch .NET and just use drivers to Mongo or Redis or the database inside Cloud Foundry, then this open source alternative has basically sapped my market differentiation. Now, one interesting thing Cloud Foundry just recently did was the Node.js stuff. I'm not sure if you guys saw that or not. And they helped cross-port the Node.js stuff over so it runs an IIS on Azure. And that's amazing. And that's, if anything, they'll give you a sign that Microsoft is under, or at least that portion of Microsoft is under some different management, and its eyes have been opened about it. I think they're going to play a catch-up game still on there, but I think there's still some openness there that if Microsoft were to really truly adopt open technologies, maybe for the first time for real, where people actually believe them, I think they can still catch up. I mean, there's still a lot of really, really smart people at Microsoft. And there's still a lot of people that I know personally that have been in .NET shops for years and years and years and know it intimately and trust Microsoft because they have always got their paycheck paid, basically. And if Microsoft can come out with things that are open and competitive, I think people will adopt it.
So, Aaron, the other thing is, and Nick sort of talked about this, but so you've got Microsoft, you've got this huge .NET, ASP set of applications out there. Yeah, you've got, Microsoft tried didn't necessarily make a great showing early on with Paz. I mean, if you walked by their booth out at Cloud Connect, I mean, it was basically a ghost town. There was very, very few people walking around. But yeah, you've got two interesting things going on, right? You've got guys like Aprenda, who we had on the show, you know, a few weeks ago. Sinclair was on. They basically have a standalone, either on-premise or off-premise, specialized a .NET platform, right? So there's options to do like pure,
very good products,
right? Yep. They make a great thing. Obviously, it's targeted just at .NET. It's not multi-language like Cloud Foundry. And then you've got Cloud Foundry being open, and you've got these guys like, was it Open Foundry? Is that right? That's the guys who did the .NET, one of the .NET implementations. So
it's Iron Foundry.
Iron Foundry, yeah. So you've got some people who are, I mean, if you talk to those guys, I know, like when we talked to Sinclair, he basically said, look, I'm happy to play nicely with Microsoft, but I moved faster than they are, and we're winning customers. And so, like, there's options out there. There's options out there for guys that have Java applications, that have .NET applications.
Right. And I'm wondering, too, like, have we reached a point where these smaller companies are more agile and, quite frankly, are able to develop and come to market with products faster for Microsoft platforms than Microsoft is able to?
You know, I'm gonna go on a limb, because before you asked me your last question, Aaron, I wanted to comment on something Gracely said. I think it's fascinating, the whole startup like mentality, right? The last what year is it? 2012. So what? How long has it been going on? You guys are older than me. What, 20 years? Startups kind of style in the tech community, like 94, 95-ish?
Yep. Did you just call us old? No, just yeah.
No, well, you guys are more experienced and wise than I am. I'm the green behind the ears kid here.
We're old.
But I would go out on a limb and say my bet is the first large companies or medium-sized companies that develop the ability to do kind of the Cisco-style spin-off startup in an effective way are going to change the industry when it comes to this, like, cloud. I really think there's a massive opportunity for people. And let's take, for example, a big .NET shop. Let's say you're a big corporation that had tons and tons of effort made in .NET, and you decide one day, it's like, look, we're never going to compete in this cloud space with these new startups and our vendors and different people that are advancing quickly because we're too slow with our legacy stuff. Let's take 5 or 6 of our sharpest guys. Let's put them in a different building, maybe in a different city, give them their own budget, break the chain of command, cut all the dotted lines, say, you know what, do what you guys need to, go experiment with this. And then those guys who have the .NET experience, then they go to the Aprendas, and then they go to the Cloud Foundries and the Iron Foundries, Tier 3 or whatever, and they're going, okay, how are we going to implement things in a new way? I think that's where things get really, really, really fascinating. I mean, the tech is one thing, right? The tech is going to be done by passionate people that care about it and want to have fun and do something new and innovative. But for me, it's how do the big legacy companies today do that? And I think it's either going to be one or two things. Either there's going to be big companies that are going to become the innovator, the guys that are going to be the example for everybody else, or you're going to see consulting companies spin off that help those companies get there. I think either one of those jobs is going to be really, really a lot of fun too. Because as you always think about, if I want to have fun and be free and drink beer at work while coding stuff till midnight and be innovative and love what I do and feel involved in ownership of what I do, I can't go work for some massive company, right? I got to go work for a startup, or I got to go do my own business. But cloud is really a great position right now. If companies can adopt that startup innovative model internally somehow, I think it's a great opportunity right now for that to be a new evolution inside of cloud. Just my two cents.
Yeah. No, I think it's I think you're going to have with enough companies like Facebook and people, you know, constantly reminded that you can do stuff as a startup and grow to be big, and you know, the cost of doing it these days isn't nearly as expensive as it was once. You know, I think that mindset will exist. It'll be interesting. Figuring out how a Microsoft or Oracle or, you know, Cisco or EMC or anybody who's a, you know, huge valuation but has to, you know, keep the quarterly numbers running, can keep up with stuff will be very, very interesting. And, you know, Cloud Foundry is kind of a good example of somebody trying it probably without any sort of business model associated with it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I think it's interesting too, because it's like what Aaron just said. You know, if you go back 10 years and you try to do that inside of a company, you need more than just a few developers and a couple smart biz dev guys, right? You needed ops guys, you needed SAN guys and storage guys and virtualization guys. You still need to build out a whole team with layers. Now it's like, I want to deploy something. I can pick from a multitude of PaaS providers that provide in the language my team already knows, and I don't have, and I can do no ops, or I can pull down, you know, Puppet Lab stuff and have them help me. You know, it's the go to market with PaaS means not only can you use your existing talent in the development shops with how they know to use it, but you can break things off and start from scratch in greenfield stuff without the major heavy lifting. You know.
Yep. Yep. So I'm gonna wrap this up with one last little anecdote question for Nick. So Aaron, this is the part that I think you'll probably lament about not having a chance to go out to Cloud Connect. So we were hanging out sort of outside the show, you know, around the bar, and Nick and I were talking to people, and Nick notices over my shoulder. He goes, "Hey, that's Adrian from Netflix," and I'm like, yeah, I think that's him. I've never met him before, but you know, you sort of have seen him around, and he was talking to some other people that everybody knows on Twitter, and he goes, "I want to go over and meet him, but I don't know him." And I said, "Well, go over and just tell him you know Christian Riley, right?" So we sort of played the, you know, friend of a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend thing.
It totally worked. Yeah, I totally did.
So he went over. He went over, talked to him, and it was totally like a Luke meets Yoda kind of thing, man. I mean, he was sucked into it. So what'd you get to talk to him about, man? What was the conversation about?
Yeah, it was funny. I walked up and I said, "Hey, how's it going? My name's Nick." And he kind of looked at me real nice and stuff, but, you know, just like, "Okay, so who are you?" And I said, "Well, I totally acted like, you know, me and Christian are best friends. So, Christian, if you hear this, I'm sorry, man." I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm friends with Christian Riley." He was like, "Oh, okay." And so we start chatting. And, no, it was awesome. We talked about, you know, I think really I was asking him about, like, some of the no-op stuff he's talked about. And then we started diving into how they scale Cassandra, and then we started diving into, you know, API discussions on REST interfaces. He told me some great funny stories on just funny things that have happened. Then we actually talked a lot about how they do their queries, really fascinating how they do their queries for Netflix and stuff. And I mean, it was just basically this massive nerd conversation. And the real cool things I got out of it was, and most anybody who's listening to this podcast has got to know, I came from being a customer on a financial side, and I've been at EMC for almost over 2 years now. And so talking to a startup from a guy from Texas is new to me, right? So a lot of you people that know a lot of startup guys will be like, "Oh, that's just the way these guys are." But I would ask him questions about things, and his reaction would be, "Oh, yeah, that's easy. We just do this." "Oh, no, we just do this." And it was just so simple and direct and kind of authoritative, and like they don't stress about too much. I mean, they're not – it's not like they're risky, but – there was so much of this, like, we just get the job done and we just use our imagination. There's so much, like, just natural, direct energy involved in what they do. And some of the things he told me, I was just blown away with how simplistic their approach is. But then at the same time, just how powerful that was, too. And I don't know, it was an awesome conversation. We traded emails after, and he's a really cool guy. I really, really enjoyed that conversation. Really the highlight of my trip up there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely cool to be able to sort of make those introductions, even though I didn't do a whole lot. So again, thanks to Christian. You know, the one thing that blows me away, and I guess this is always the thing that I'll sort of leave on this note, but you know, you hear people a lot of times in the enterprise, and they go, "Well, you know, people use Netflix as an example of cloud, and they only really do one thing, and so that's not the same as what we do." And you talk to Adrian, you realize a couple of really interesting statistics. One is, yes, they drive about 30% of all the traffic on the internet at certain points in time. So it's like, okay, well, yeah, but it's video. And but the other things that are pretty crazy is, for something that basically drives, you know, a third of the traffic on the internet, did he ever give you numbers for a number of operational people? I got to guess his team is probably about like 100. I mean, let's say they're
I didn't ask exact numbers. He did say that basically the majority of the work is done by developers directly.
Right. So let's say their team is 100 to 200 people, right? Compare that to a Fortune 500 IT organization, right?
Right.
They support something like 300 different devices through their API strategy, right? So think about that, right, as like 300 different types of end users, right?
And probably 250 of them are Android, right?
They're everything. It's Xbox. It's everything. It's Xbox. It's Android. It's iOS. But tons and tons of
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
You know, and the other thing is, just you watch the number of things that they release in terms of applications. I mean, they run dozens and dozens and dozens of different types of applications, different clusters of Cassandra and Hadoop, and they run all sorts of database things and queries. And I mean, there's a ton of applications that make that one click the button stream to you thing happen. I guess my takeaway from this is for anybody who's like, oh, Netflix is a complete anomaly and nobody should look at what they do, is like, they run a ridiculously complicated thing at massive scale. But like Nick said, because they have almost a design first, very simplistic, I don't want to say simplistic, but you know, very direct way of looking at things, they're able to do stuff at scale. And it's not just about that they do it on AWS, it's about that, you know, they've taken it from a business approach first, and then everything else comes behind that. And, you know, the numbers that
they make
do
it look easy.
Yeah, I mean, and Adrian's the first to tell you. I mean, the people they hire are, you know, world-class people, and obviously most businesses can't afford to find them, or they're not going to find them outside of certain parts of Silicon Valley. But you know, if you're in certain industries and you start to think about, like, how could I get disrupted, and, you know, nobody could disrupt me at our scale, we have so much money, yeah, it could happen. It could most definitely happen. So,
And you should also segue to the fact that they've been releasing every week large portions of code, open source, for people to see how they're doing things. They're sharing it. So, I'll go back to what I said before. There's going to be somebody somewhere who's going to talk executives in some large company into letting them try to be a Netflix for that business model, for that vertical. And that's going to set the standard for the rest of the industry. I don't know who it's going to be, or if it doesn't happen from the internal. Maybe it happens from a consulting group that talks into it. But some executive at some point is going to get it. And the minute they get it, there's going to be something pioneered. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the executive is going to be like, oh, now I get it too. I think for me, that's where I see cloud really blossoming out, is when all of a sudden these big organizations start to really, really invest in it. Then it's going to really start to steamroll.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, guys, we've been going for a long time. We covered a lot of very, very interesting topics, and obviously some stuff that we'll have to watch the rest of the year. Aaron, you want to take us home? I think we're out of time for the week.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Nick, where can everyone find out more about you?
I maintain a little blog with some goofy tools on it, nickapedia.com, NickApedia. Man, I had to, like, think on how to spell that. .com. And then I'm on Twitter at linksbat, LynxBat. And you can hit me an email, linksbat@gmail.com, if anyone wants to email me. But usually Twitter is the best way to hit me, because I'm usually saying something stupid there.
Cool. All right. You can follow us on Twitter at TheCloudCastNet, or reach us on the web at TheCloudCast.net, where you'll find links to the show, our YouTube channel, which also, Brian, that's doing awesome. Completely off script for a second, but amazing amount of traffic you're doing. I don't know that I haven't done a single video, so you completely get all credit for that.
Yeah. I was watching those videos. Oh, sorry to interrupt. I just want to say this funny thing. I was watching those videos, and then I spent like a week with Gracie, and I quit watching them.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I got my fill.
All right, that'll do it. That'll do it for this week. So thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for having me on, guys.